Hey you, good morning, good morning. It's Monday morning, the 11th of March, 2024. Monday, yeah, 6:06, funnily enough, as I record this, 6:06. As I press record, I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you had a restful, relaxing weekend, and you cannot wait to attack the week ahead. Yeah, I'll go all drill sergeant on you shortly. I'll start screaming at you, get up out of bed. Ready for the week ahead. Let's, as usual, go to the front pages of today's UK dailies, beginning with the Metro. "I'm Smiles Better" is the headline. Kate's joyous Mother's Day photo. The Princess of Wales, Kate Middleton, has not been seen in public since Christmas Day. I think there was a photograph of her in a car being driven by her mother, a Range Rover, a week or so ago, but she hasn't been seen. And this has fueled conspiracy theorists. A lot of conspiracy theories flying around in recent weeks about this woman. They released a photograph yesterday, the palace, of her with her three children. Now, funnily enough, shortly after the photograph was released, it was then pulled by the palace. Why? Well, because of a belief, or somebody believed, or somebody suggested, that the photograph may have been doctored. Doctored. Yes, she had an abdominal procedure. So, she had an operation just before Christmas, or just after Christmas, I can't remember. She hasn't been seen since then. In fact, I've given you incorrect information. The palace did not withdraw the photograph. Four news agencies have withdrawn the photograph over their concerns. The photograph was manipulated. So I suppose this will add further fuel to the conspiracy theorists about the whereabouts of this woman. They'll be absolutely running with this one today. Yeah, so the palace put out a photograph of her and her kids. Four news agencies have taken it down because of concerns about manipulation. There you are. How curious. Daily Telegraph: photo from palace was doctored, say agencies. Princess of Wales Mothering Sunday image of family recalled over editing fears. That's the Telegraph. The Daily Mirror: thank you is the headline. First official pick after op. So running the photograph, the Mirror, the agencies must have pulled it after the dailies went to print, because most of them carry a photograph. The photograph. The Daily Mail: town hall's woke spree. So the Daily Mail lead story, the Mail accusing nearly 200 town halls of doubling their spending on what it brands ridiculous woke jobs, citing figures from the Taxpayers Alliance. So the Taxpayers Alliance has been looking into the spending of local authorities around the country and is claiming that millions and millions of pounds are being wasted on creating woke jobs. That's in today's Daily Mail. The Times leads with, and we will look into it in a minute, headline: blasphemy demos are growing in radicalism. Blasphemy demos. So the Times claims that Britain is facing an alarming rise in intimidation and threats of violence against those perceived to have insulted Islam. Is there any truth in that? Well, we'll come back to it in a moment. On the front page of The Guardian, the headline is: Tory ex-home secretaries warn against politicising extremism. We're definitely coming back to that in a moment. There is a photograph also on the front page of The Guardian, an image of a family in Rafah in southern Gaza. Ramadan began yesterday, didn't it? The Guardian saying thousands will be spending Ramadan, it's more than thousands, in makeshift camps as the conflict continues. So that's a pretty awful photograph on the front page of The Guardian. The Daily Express: will get tougher with work shy to cut taxes, says Prime Minister. He's told, the Daily Express has Sunak in an exclusive interview, It's common sense. Where people can work, they should work. And he has vowed to turbocharge growth by cutting the ballooning benefits bill. That is the Express. The I headline, faulty IT at Home Office hits effort to tackle illegal immigration. That's a story about how a flawed system has cost the government £71 million, causing errors and delays in the Home Office, and that this is having a very negative impact on the government's ability to deal with illegal immigration. They're saying IT has a lot to do with it. The Financial Times, Biden struggles to win voter credit as Americans feel happier on economy. The paper is reflecting on news that the US airlifted some embassy staff from the country where a state of emergency was declared following an escalation in gang violence. That's to do with Haiti, isn't it? That's Haiti. Yeah, there's also another story on the front page of the Financial Times. Gangs attack state buildings. Haiti ablaze. Haiti is basically a failed state. Gangs are running gangs are running Haiti now. And the US has airlifted some staff. That's right. I'm reading two stories at the same time. The Daily Star, Sacre Bleu, is the headline. What's it about? Well, the Star is quoting a French linguist who reckons English doesn't exist and says we are all speaking badly pronounced French. That's right. What's the guy's name? I can't pronounce his surname. It's Bernard Cerquiglini. That's right. Bernard Cerquiglini. That sounds Italian anyway. He was born in Lyon and he reckons English is basically a non-existent language. We're all speaking badly pronounced French. He might have a point. I don't know. What say you? This is the papers, the 11th of March, 2024. Let's look now inside in more depth at some of the papers. More intriguing stories. The Guardian has led with three Tory ex-home secretaries warn against politicising anti-extremism. So I'm going to read a bit of this. Leading counter-terror and extremism experts, including three former Tory Home Secretaries, have warned senior politicians against using extremism to score political points as the Communities Secretary Michael Gove prepares to announce his controversial new anti-extremism plan. So the three Home Secretaries of yesteryear in question are Priti Patel, Sajid Javid and Amber Rudd. They're among a dozen signatories to a joint statement warning about the risks of politicising anti-extremism days before the Communities Secretary Gove unveils his proposals. Others who signed the statement include Brendan Cox, the widower of Joe Cox, the MP, and the co-founder of Survivors Against Terror. Neil Basu, former head of counter-terrorism policing, and Richard Danat, the former chief of the General Staff. The warning comes days before Gove is set to publish the government's new official definition of extremism, which we're very interested in. Are we not? And but we are, 100%. Critics say the definition will be so broad that it risks exacerbating community tensions and leaves ministers open to legal challenge. The statement said, in the run-up to a general election, it's particularly important that consensus is maintained and that no political party uses the issue to seek short-term tactical advantage. We urge the Labour Party and the Conservative Party to work together to build a shared understanding of extremism and a strategy to prevent it that can stand the test of time, no matter who wins the election. So Patel, the former Home Secretary, told The Guardian, it's really important we do not malign the wrong people through the wrong definitions. We haven't seen anything yet from the government, but it is easy, as we've seen historically, to hide behind labels or definitions which sometimes end up being counterproductive. It has to strike the right balance between free speech and how we bring communities together. Now, dear listener, Jonathan Hall, the government's independent reviewer of terrorism legislation, did not sign the statement. He told The Guardian, wait for it, the proposed definition of extremism is very loose. It isn't being debated in Parliament, and effectively, it is a government label. the distinction from the way we deal with terrorism couldn't be clearer. And this is what I've been saying about this since it was announced they would attempt to redefine what extremism is. Hold on to that, we'll come back to it. Now, the Times lead story today, blasphemy demos are growing in radicalism. This is about the most non-story. This is as non-story, as far as non-stories go, that I've seen for a long time. According to the Times, Britain faces an alarming rise in intimidation and threats of violence against those perceived to have insulted Islam. A new report will warn. Protests condemning acts of apparent blasphemy have become more frequent and radicalised, according to independent research commissioned by the government's counter-extremism chief. The report seen by the Times exposes links between activists at the forefront of recent protests in the UK and an extremist Islamist political party in Pakistan whose members have regularly called for blasphemers to be beheaded. It concluded that a new generation of activists is trying to make blasphemy a key area of concern for British Muslims. The problem is there is zero evidence offered by the paper. The paper says it has seen the report, and this is why I call it a non-story. The Times says we've seen the report, but it offers no evidence. It doesn't cite any specific protests. Where have anti-blasphemy protests taken place? Let us know. Show us some photographs or some video footage of them where people are calling for blasphemers to be dealt with. They offer no evidence whatsoever. In fact, just before coming to the studio to make this podcast, I was watching the Sky newspaper review from last evening. They do it every night, Sky News. They look ahead to the following day. They're reading the same papers I am reading today, right? And to be fair to the Sky News panellists, they agree. They say this is a non-story. Where's the evidence? We haven't seen. I haven't seen. I live in Manchester, big Muslim population up here. I haven't seen any anti-blasphemy protests where people are calling for those who insult the Prophet or insult Islam to be beheaded. So this is a non-story. And again, it's just drip, 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 right? And here's my theory. So they're talking about defining extremism, redefining it and broadening it out. And of course, they're going to talk about pro-Palestine marches and they're going to throw in, you know, Muslim extremism. But that's not what they're really interested in the opinion of this broadcaster. It's never where they want you to look. It's always somewhere else where they don't want you to look. And I believe they're coming after those who are writing about, speaking about, broadcasting about the Great Reset, call it what you want, Agenda 2030, the technocratic, dystopian, transhumanist society they are building in front of our eyes. It you know, that society where there will be a social credit model of living to keep people in line. That is what they're going after in reality. They don't really care about people taking to the streets to talk about their religions or, you know, to protest the Israeli genocide in Gaza. What they're really going after is the independent media. And that is what the Online Harms Bill is all about, or the Online Safety Bill. And that is my opinion, but I can back it up with, I can cite examples to support my theory. I do it every day on the Richie Allen Show. So it's outrageous, this. You know, blasphemy demos are growing in radicalism. Therefore, we need to redefine extremism. Yeah, right. You know? So you have three Home Secretaries of yesteryear saying, you can't do this, it's not good. You have a counter-extremism guy who basically monitors the government. He's saying, it's not good at all. What you're going to have is basically the government being in a position to label whoever the government chooses as an extremist, and this can't be good in any so-called free and liberal democracy. So it's a very important story, and this one is going to, we got to watch it carefully in the coming days and watch for Gove's final definition of what an extremist is, because they're saying, in the, we know they're saying, because they've admitted this, that anybody who offers vocal or active basically opposition to institutions and British values. What does that mean exactly? People who vocally oppose or criticise the institutions of the UK or British values. Let's watch it. Let's watch it closely. This is the papers. The Oscars took place last night. So too late for the tabloids or the broadsheets to cover, but the online editions of the newspapers are covering the Oscars. Oppenheimer, the Christopher Nolan film, has apparently swept the board, with Nolan himself winning Best Director. Cillian Murphy, the star of it, has won Best Actor. The film has won Best Film or Best Picture. I think they say Best Picture, don't they? And Emma Stone, who wasn't in Oppenheimer, but she's won Best Actress, I think, for a film. Is it called Pretty Things or Pretty Little Things? I haven't seen it. Cillian Murphy is a curmudgeonly little bollocks, which I like about him. He's an abrasive little fecker, apparently. He once notoriously, on the set of Peaky Blinders, turned the ex-footballer turned pundit Gary Neville, turned him down for a selfie. Just left him standing there. And in Bono's recent autobiography, which I had to read, it killed me, but I did read it. You know, I have a complicated relationship with Bono. I don't have any relationship with him. Bono hasn't a clue, of course, who I am. But I've listened to him and his music and followed him for most of my life, really, but not anymore. But I did read his autobiography. Apparently, Bono was at a party. This is how abrasive Cillian Murphy is. You got to love him. He was at a party, Bono, quaffing champagne, and up comes Cillian Murphy. No small talk whatsoever. Oh, how you doing? And blah, blah, blah. Murphy says to him, you used to write good songs that were challenging, you know, imperialism and challenging the military-industrial complex in the United States. Now you just write bollocks. There must have been a few beers. But to Bono's credit, right, he took it on the chin, Bono, and said to him, well, you know, elaborate. Don't just come and tell me we write bollocks. What do you mean? And then they got into a conversation. So he's a bit abrasive, Cillian Murphy. No doubt the Irish media will be full of it today. An Irishman has won Best Actor. I can't remember when an Irish man or an Irish woman won Best Actor or Best Actress. I'm going to think Brenda Fricker or Daniel Day-Lewis, although the Brits claim Daniel, don't they? Anyway, look, enough. So the Oscars was on last night. Oppenheimer did well. Pro-Palestine protests delay stars Oscar attendance. So this is the Telegraph online edition. They're saying the demonstrations over the genocide in Gaza, the Telegraph doesn't describe it as genocide, of course, don't get excited, blocked major streets leading to the ceremony in Hollywood on Sunday, forcing some stars to use golf carts to squeeze through traffic on their way to the red carpet. Very good. Protesters waved placards at the celebrities and shouted shame, which is a bit unfair, really. What can the celebrities do about it, you know? Many of them have spoken out. John Cusack, the legendary John Cusack, again, speaking about my childhood, you know, Better Off Dead, The Sure Thing, wonderful actor John Cusack. He's been incredibly vocal about Israel, and he's called it genocide. I'm guessing he didn't attend the Oscars. Zinab Nasru, a protester, said the Oscars are happening down the road while people are being murdered, killed and bombed. We're here today so people cannot say, oh, we didn't know. Some Oscars attendees, according to the Telegraph, abandoned the golf carts and took off their high heels to walk up the hill to the ceremony to get away from the protesters. Staying with the broadsheets, here's one in the Times. Headline, Jewish people are frightened, but it is wrong to say there are no-go areas. This is Dame Sarah Khan. Pro-Palestinian protests in London are overwhelmingly peaceful, she said. It is unhelpful to say parts of the capital have become no-go areas for Jewish people at weekends. Now, she's a government advisor on social cohesion. She was previously the government's counter-extremism czar, and she has contradicted claims made by her successor in that role, a guy called Robin Simcox. He said central London had become a no-go zone for Jews. She's saying no. Now, she's not saying bollocks, but she might as well be saying bollocks. She says she understands that some Jews might be a bit concerned about it, but the fact is these are overwhelmingly peaceful. And among Palestinian people and Muslims, there is a real fear of censorship and a sense of it. And that it is being levelled at Palestinian communities and those who support the rights of Palestinian people. So this is a good intervention by Sara Khan. Of course it is bollocks to say there are no go areas for Jews or Jews are terrified. Not firstly, let's deal with the big elephant in the room. Many Jewish people are attending these protests. So those Jews are not particularly scared, are they? Firstly, right? And secondly, no, not secondly, let's just leave it. We know what's going on there. Again, it all ties in with this nonsense. And a lot of this fear-mongering, the Jews are terrified stuff, is coming from the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism and the Community Securities Trust. Their whole business model is based on keeping Jews in a state of perpetual fear. It's what they do. Otherwise, they wouldn't exist. The Community Securities Trust makes money out of providing security for buildings that house Jewish people. Think about it. It's a fucking protection racket. I've said it a million times over the years. Here's one in The Guardian. You won't be surprised in The Guardian. Europe unprepared for rapidly growing climate risks. Yawn. Yawn. Europe isn't prepared for the risks it faces, the European Environment Agency has said in its first risk assessment, from wildfires burning down homes to violent weather straining public finances. The report says more action is needed to address half of the 36 significant climate risks with potentially severe consequences that it identifies for Europe. Five more risks need urgent action, according to the report. So the European Environment Agency, or the EEA, the executive director has said, our new analysis shows that Europe faces urgent climate risks growing faster than our societal preparedness. The report looks at how severe the climate threats are and how well prepared Europe is to deal with them. It says the most pressing risks, which are growing worse as fossil fuel pollution heats the planet, are heat stress, flash floods, river floods, the health of coastal and marine ecosystems, and the need for solidarity funds to recover from disasters. If you dredged your rivers, you wouldn't have river floods. If you built better coastal defences, you wouldn't have flash floods. Heat stress, well, I don't even know what that is, to be honest. The marine ecosystems, if you stopped dumping plastic into the ocean, you wouldn't have any of that. And that's got nothing to do with climate change. It's complete and utter bollocks. Listen to a little paragraph. Listen to this. Listen to this. You're not going to believe this. Hang on. Europe has heated up more than any other continent since the Industrial Revolution. Wait for this language. Wait for the next bit. It has heated about twice as fast as the global average, wait for it, as carbon dioxide has clogged the atmosphere and trapped sunlight. CO2 has clogged the atmosphere and trapped sunlight. What a load of bollocks. And I can say this with certainty, even though I'm not a scientist. But I'm a researcher and a pretty good journalist. Let's have a look at what constitutes or what makes up the atmosphere of planet Earth or the dry air. 78% of it is nitrogen. 21% of it is oxygen. Nearly 1% of it is argon. And then a number of gases, including CO2, 0.04%. That's ozone, nitrous oxide, methane and CO2. 0.04%. And it has been proven. It has been proven that when CO2, when the percentage of CO2 increases, it is mostly from natural causes, ocean outgassing, volcanic activity, not from people. Because man-made CO2 is tiny. It's insignificant compared to natural CO2. human emissions cannot be driving what they call global warming, because they are a tiny fraction of the overall natural emissions. It has been proven that temperature drives CO2, not the other way around. This is a fact. It's not conjecture, right? The CO2 in the atmosphere is mostly caused by volcanoes. That's a fact. Solar cycles drive climate. The big red ball in the sky, as Ian Plimer has said. The changing of the Earth's axis. The world has experienced three periods of cooling since 1850. Three periods of cooling while they tell you that CO2 is increasing during those periods. They don't mention the natural weather variations like El Nino. They're lying. And they're lying because they want to use the fake threat of anthropogenic warming theory, the fake threat of humans are killing the planet with CO2 because they want to drastically change the way we live. And they want to restrict what it is we can do. They want to turn the planet into a prison. And that's a fact. It isn't conjecture. Climate bollocks is all the rage, and it's going to become basically their all-in strategy, in my opinion, in the coming weeks, months and years. Here's a really interesting one in the Daily Mail today. What do you make of this? The headline is, "Do they know something we don't? American billionaires are selling stocks by the boatload, sparking fears of an impending financial disaster." Jeff Bezos, the third richest man, allegedly, behind Louis Vuitton's Bernard Arnault and Elon Musk, unloaded $8.5 billion in Amazon shares this month alone. Mark Zuckerberg, allegedly the fourth richest man, sold about 1.4 million Meta shares worth roughly $638 million. Jamie Dimon, chairman and CEO of JP Morgan, shilled, they say, $150 million this last week in his first cash out since taking the reins of JP Morgan nearly 20 years ago. Within days, Apollo Global Management's Leon Black also enacted his first ever sale, shedding $172 million in his equity firm after 34 years. Walmart's Walton family sold $1.5 billion in a week, bringing its total sale proceeds to $2.3 billion since December. The series of transactions were all made within weeks of each other and have sparked conversations amongst onlookers. What is the great share sell-off all about, dear listener? Is there a crash coming? That is the question being posed by the Daily Mail today. Now, that is something which comes up from time to time on the Richie Allen Show. You know, there is a belief amongst people, some of them learned men and women, that before we see a proper rollout of a central bank digital currency, and we know that the Bank of England has been told that it's got to have a digital pound sometime before 2030, we've been told, look, they're going to bring this in with a massive financial crash. So could it be argued, or is it worth investigating even, that this mass sell-off by so many billionaires could precede a financial crash? What do they know that we don't? Do they know something we don't is the headline in the Daily Mail today. I think that is an interesting question, maybe something we can explore on the Richie Allen Show this week. Let's look at the BBC News website before I take my leave of you today. It is full, really, of stories from the Oscars overnight. Oppenheimer sweeps the board, the outfits, the war, the women, best actress Emma Stone shows off classic style. Here's an interesting one from the BBC News website. More ethnic minority chief executives at top UK firms. Boardrooms are becoming more ethnically diverse. Wait for it. But more still needs to be done. According to a review of the UK's largest 350 businesses, the Parker review said there are now 12 ethnic minority chief executives in the FTSE 100, up from 7 in 2022. Good old diversity story. I'll leave that there. We talk about the Oscars and we talk about stars being confronted by pro-Palestine protesters. According to the BBC, the director of Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer, makes Gaza statement in Oscar speech. Now, Zone of Interest, I haven't seen it, but it is a story about a couple. He's an SS guard, she's a housewife, living basically next door to Auschwitz. That's basically the central theme of the movie, I believe. So Jonathan Glazer directed it. Jonathan Glazer focused on the war in Gaza in his acceptance speech at the Oscars, saying he refuted his Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation. His film about Auschwitz and the Holocaust won the Best International Film Award. Glazer said those killed in both Israel and Gaza were victims of dehumanization. Celebrities, including Billie Eilish, also wore pins calling for a ceasefire. So there was a little bit of politics at the Oscars last evening. That is it for the papers. Thank you so much for listening to it today. I really appreciate it. I will be live on air at 4 o'clock this afternoon, UK time, with the Richie Allen Show, if that is your thing. Have a great Monday now. Until later, it's bye from the BBG then.